This is the Car Dealer Podcast driven by CarGurus. You want the best return for your advertising budgets, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favourite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me this week is editor of Motor Trade. Oh, no, that's not right, is it? James Baggett? Wow. Not familiar with that. Yeah, nice to have you, James.
Thank you, John. That was nearly a P45 offence, actually.
Well, I'm running out of amusing things to say for you. That's the problem.
Yeah, just get more and more offensive. I like it. Yeah.
How are you? How's your week been?
My week's been very good, thanks. Would you like an extension update?
I would like an extension update. So, I don't know if our listeners would.
No, they were tough. They're going to get it anyway. So we had a council summit yesterday at the house. The heritage officer and the chief planning officer came out to visit the site to look at those bricks that I'd lovingly cleaned and say, yes, you can build your extension from those bricks. So obviously I did a good job, John. So if it all fails in the podcast career, I can go to brick cleaning.
Excellent. That was the only thing they were inspecting, was it?
Pretty much, yeah. That and they wanted to see whether I was at, what slate I was putting on the roof, as if there's different types.
Lovely. Bureaucracy is alive and well in Hampshire.
Yes. So all good. Yeah, but apart from that, what have we been doing work-wise? We've been doing a lot of planning for Car Dealer Power, haven't we? So Car Dealer Power Awards, which are the awards voted for by our readers for the best suppliers to work with and the best manufacturers to represent, will be coming out on June the 28th. So I've been writing lots of scripts. We've been talking to lots of people involved in that for the big video. And then next week, we're going to be out shooting the studio stuff, aren't we? So
we are.
Lots of planning for that. How's
exciting
your
exciting times ahead? Yes, well, lots of Car Dealer Power and talking to people, as you said. Looking forward to enjoying the frightfully sunny weather that is apparently approaching us.
Indeed.
But we're not there yet.
People can listen to
on Friday. Podcast. Let's podcast.
Yes, they can podcast. Listen to our podcast in the garden. What a joy!
Yes, absolutely. Although, do be aware of any noise complaints from the neighbours.
Yeah.
I'll move us on. So, introducing our guest this week. He joins us from the world of logistics. It's James Shaw from Booker Movement. Welcome, James.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for having me.
Lovely to have you. I mean, I'm guessing our listeners can get a vague idea of what Booker Movement does just from the name, but do you want to fill us in with a bit more detail?
Yeah, absolutely. It does kind of what it says on the tin, realistically. So we're a software company that helps companies manage and control their logistics. And we can do that in a number of ways. We've got a marketplace where people can put a listing on for a vehicle movement, which can be taken by one of our subcontractors, which we've got quite a number of on board, which we work quite closely with. We've got sort of our management system to help some of these companies that are still on spreadsheets and emails to sort of replace that sort of antiquated system that people love and don't like to move away from their spreadsheets. And then we've got the Dave Wrap, which is really interesting. I think which gets brushed under the carpet quite a lot, that to stop cars going missing from dealerships. So when a company is handing a car over to a driver, we've got a little app that stops that and allows them to take photos and license checks and things like that, just because I think that gets swept under the carpet quite a lot when cars go missing, handing over to drivers. So, yeah, we're trying to help the industry, and it's all on a pay-as-you-go model. There's no bidding and there's no monthly subscriptions. It's just a pay-as-you-go model just to try and help individuals, companies, dealership groups to move cars around the country without racking up massive costs.
James, tell us a little bit about your background then. Have you always been in the motor trade?
Yeah, as a rule. So I've been in the car industry now for about 10 years. So I was previously at an inspection and collection firm, Vehicle Quality Solutions, the largest independent in the UK. So I've been brought up in that sort of environment. And we used to sort of subcontract out all of our work out. So we created our own driver team, which I sort of headed up, and we had sort of 80 odd drivers. And then we used to subcontract the rest out. So I actually used to be a customer of Booker Movements. And then unfortunately, when I got made redundant for VQS, I then got approached by Bill and Pat, the directors here, to come under, instead of being a customer, come and actually run the software. So I've been there for about 10 years now and had a unique position whereby I've had my own drivers, so I sort of ran a logistics company. I've also subcontracted work out. So I've sort of been on both sides of the fence. So it's great to sort of understand both sides and the frustrations that both can entail within the wonderful world that is logistics.
Yeah, it's it's not the most glamorous of terms, is it, logistics? But I mean, it must be incredibly stressful for the people that deal with it. I mean, I just sometimes look at these big car dealer groups or these auction houses that just have to move these huge amounts of stock around, and just think, I don't know how these people get their head around it. So, I mean, is it a case of just, do you deal with people that, is it small dealers who just want to move the odd car here and there or deliver them to people's homes, or is it big contracts you're dealing with picking up cars from auctions and deliver them to one location?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The car movement industry and logistics is sort of a frowned upon word, isn't it? It's so stressful, and with the likes of DPD and everything like that, and the way that sort of industry is going, everyone expects everything to be tracked, and you can see the driver approaching, and the car industry is just sadly not there yet. But no, in terms of clients and things, we work with both. So we work with independents, so we're partnered with the IMDA for independent dealers, but then we also work with the likes of Sitner's, Virtues, Car Shop, and a few of the big car supermarkets. So yeah, we kind of do both. If anyone needs a car moving, we can facilitate it, whether it's a one car or 1,000 a month. The system's pay as you go, so there is no sort of benefit to being bigger or smaller. We're just trying to make it easier for everyone.
Have you seen a big increase in this since the pandemic? I mean, I'm guessing that during the pandemic you were incredibly busy.
Yeah, it's been interesting since the pandemic. I think obviously with the new car supply dwindling, but what's been a massive growth is the sort of the car supermarkets and the car buying. I think that's created another level of vehicle movements within the industry that perhaps weren't there maybe 3 or 4 years ago. They're a very different type of movements because you have to wait for the appraisal and finance, and it's created an hour waiting time. So it's definitely put a different dynamic. And there's some of the big players in that, such as Motorway and the alike, that have created lots more. There's definitely more demand for vehicle movements than supply at the moment. I think over COVID, a lot went under, and margins are tight within logistics. I think there's definitely a lot. This demand is much greater than supply, and it's definitely causing issues.
And are you yourself a bit of a car nut? Do you like your cars?
I'm not the best. As long as it goes and I'm comfortable, I just get too many speeding tickets. That's my problem. I guess I have too much of a fast car or a fancy car.
Well, we're looking forward to getting your opinion on this week's stories nonetheless. So, John, shall we crack on with them?
Absolutely. Excuse me. So, if you haven't listened before, James and I have chosen our favourite stories from the car dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, and we're going to have a chat about each one as we go through. At the end, other James gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can tweet at Car Dealer Mag and let us know if you think we've missed anything. Apparently, I was the winner last week, so I will go first. And I will start with a light-hearted story, sort of. Playing off Sitner, who we just mentioned, and this is news that Pagani have chosen Sitner for their new dealership in Manchester. So this is quite interesting, because I was reading this and I was thinking, well, who runs the existing Pagani dealership in London? And I think it doesn't seem to be affiliated with any dealer group. It's sort of independent.
Same question. I think it's run by the manufacturer themselves, you know.
Possibly. It didn't look like it had much sort of Italians on the board, so to speak, when I'd look at Companies House. Anyway, so Sitner have bagged this, which is quite a coup for them, because they now represent Bugatti, Ferrari, Lamborghini, McLaren. I mean, they've got the sole importer thing for Alpina, haven't they? And various other regular, shall we say, luxury brands like Land Rover and so on. So yes, this will be appearing in Wilmslow, which is, if you're a fan of Coronation Street, you'll know is where they all like to pretend they go and live when they've made loads of money. Quite a posh bit in Cheshire. So yes, quite a coup for Sittner there to grab Pagani. I mean, I did think as well, it's a surprising expansion for, well, it's not surprising in a way because I've only got two dealerships now, including this one. But of all the time for Pagani to expand their breadth across the UK, you'd think the times of electrification are not really one of them.
No, I
got enough demand.
When I wrote this story this morning, I did a little bit of digging as well, just like you have when you've done your research. And I found some pictures of the inside of the showroom, which weren't on the press release. They were on Sittner's Instagram. But there was no car in the showroom. It was like a luxury sort of kind of business class lounge where I sort of assume they can't get a car in there because they don't actually make that very many, do they?
No,
and I suppose having a car in the showroom that is £3.5 million upwards is probably quite a lot to tie up in stock in one car.
Yeah, you don't want too many of them lying around.
No, I suppose you don't want to move that many of those, do you? Can you imagine the insurance bill on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to insure one just in case. I wouldn't mind driving it and having a go, but yeah, insurance not so much.
It was nice to, I agree with you though, John, on this one. Nice to see Sittner picking up another luxury car brand. I mean, anybody who looks on at that dealer group will just look on enviably, won't they? I mean, they have got some amazing brands in their portfolio. And no wonder the second most profitable car dealer group in the UK as a result.
Exactly. Some tasty margins to be had, I would imagine, on your average Huayra or whatever else.
How on earth you say that? I have no idea.
Well, like I just said it there. Exactly.
Oh, very good. Well, I don't. You've obviously Googled that, haven't you? Did you Google it or YouTube it? Or...
No, I happen to know these things, James.
It's because you are a car fan. Right, I'll move us on to my first story, John. And that is news that was breaking at the time of the podcast. Came out 5 minutes beforehand. So you haven't got time to A, pick it, or B, read it. So I will talk to you all about this. So this is... this is a story that came out today. We've had Jack Williams, one of our reporters in Portsmouth Crown Court, for the sentencing of a used car dealer who had been caught clocking 2.9 million miles off 33 used cars in Hampshire. So he got caught by Hampshire Trading Standards in a partnership with the National Trading Standards Investigations Team, and he was in court today. You might be wondering why he was jailed for this. I mean, we cover these sorts of stories many times, don't we? And actually, many used car dealers don't get jailed for clocking cars, especially only 33. We've had a few where they've actually clocked a lot more. The problem with this chap, a Mr. Ashley Wilson, 27-year-old from Fareham in Hampshire, was he was actually on a suspended sentence for doing something very similar previously. So, and... awkwardly went back before the same judge. So I think when you go back before the same judge who was giving you a suspended sentence, who at the time you've told, I'm a changed man, Your Honour. I'm not going to do this ever again, is pretty much what he said when he was in court. And it actually happens that he was doing this existing scam that he's just been sentenced for at the same time as being given the suspended sentence for the last one. So he got just under 5 years today. Jack Williams, who went along to the court to report on this, said he went into the dock with a bag ready for transport to prison. So I think he'd been tipped off that he wouldn't be coming home. So a word of warning to anybody out there thinking of clocking cars, especially if you're on suspended sentence.
Yeah, and I was just, you said that 2.9 million miles have been removed from the odometers of 33 cars. Fans of maths will know that that actually means he's wiped an average of 87,800 miles off each car.
Wow.
That is a lot as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive. I'm not sure you could, like, if there were 100,000 mile cars suddenly up for sale with 20,000, I think that might be a bit obvious, but whoa.
The judge was obviously a fan of maths as well and facts, because he likened in his summing up that the figure was enough to get to the moon and back on six occasions, he said, to the packed court, packed courtroom and press bench of one.
That is an impressive stat.
He was clearly played up to the audience, wasn't he? But that's my one, John. Back to you.
Okie dokie. What should I choose? I'm trying not to talk about EVs. So I'm not going to talk about EVs. I'm going to give you some sad news that I know will appeal to you, James Baggers, which is Volvo has killed off the plug-in hybrid XC40. Probably don't care about that. S90, probably don't care about that. And the cross-country V90.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which I know you were such a big fan of that you subsequently not bought one. But this is partly to do with them wanting to increase the number of EVs in their showrooms. I'm not quite sure how killing off a handful of trim levels does that, but then this is the witchcraft that is involved in manufacturer planning. So the thing I found slightly strange about this is the PHEV version of the XC40 is going, as I said, which you would think at this point is actually growing in popularity. I think people are after plug-in hybrids and hybrids, aren't they? More than, well, not more than EVs, but they're certainly there as a transition item, aren't they?
Well, the interesting. Go on. I was just going to say the interesting thing that I thought in this story was the line that they want to be 50% of its sales to be EVs by 2025, which is not far away. It's a couple of years. And if you think by next year, manufacturers only have to have, I think it's 24% of their sales have to be EVs. They're wanting to do this far ahead of schedule. So maybe that's drawing part of the reason for this.
50% is an aggressive target though, isn't it? 50% is a high number as well. It's I don't see how they can. It's tough. In fair play, if they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really got the number of models required for that yet, have they? They've got one. Is it?
There's lots coming, isn't there? EX90.
That's true.
Yeah, which is the electric version of the XC90. They've got the same for. There's a smaller one as well. I think it's called the EX30.
Yes, which I can't legally talk about because we haven't written a story about it, but it does look very interesting and also quite keenly priced, I believe, if the press event the other day is anything to be believed. I believe is it started about 35,000, which is, you know, for a premium, smallish, crossovery thing, fully electric, is kind of chasing MG for cost, isn't it, in a way? So if that comes out at that price, that will do very well, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I mean, I love the Volvo brand. I've shouted about that before many times, but it always surprises me that they are the ones that are going so fast after electric. It just, for me, the two things don't really sit quite as well together as they do with some other brands. You think Volvo would be quite traditional. I find it quite interesting that they are being so forward thinking with their product range, and actually probably a lot more than some other premium brands.
Then I think partially it comes down to who they're owned by. I think if you've got the might of Geely behind you, or Geely, whatever they're called, you've probably got access to a lot of battery production facility. I imagine that cheapest one will be made in China as well, because a lot of Volvo is made in China at the minute, aren't they? I think the S90 is made in China and then bizarrely gets on a train all the way from China to here. Top fact for you there.
Thank you. Well, enough about your electric cars, and we'll move on to my story about electric cars, which is Rowan Atkinson, no less, Mr. Bean and Blackadder star, writing that now, some would say, ill-fated column in The Guardian at the weekend about his thoughts on electric cars and the car industry. I don't think I've ever seen so much backlash about a column in motoring as I've seen on this one. So many people backing him up and so many people saying he was completely and utterly wrong. I mean, I don't know about you, John, but my social media feeds have been pretty full of this. So just to summarize it, Rowan Atkinson said he feels duped by electric cars and he wants people to actually instead focus on making their cars last longer instead. So the sort of gist of this is that while he says electric cars from tailpipe emissions perspective are actually better for the environment, he's considerably worried about the impact that there is on producing these cars, you know, actually digging up the raw materials that are needed to make them. He says his biggest issue is with this sort of, he says, fast fashion car sales. He says that encourages owners to change every 3 years, and he thinks this is wasteful, and actually thinks he wants people to stay in their cars for longer. So writing in the Guardian, he said, currently on average, we keep our new cars for only 3 years before selling them on, driven mainly by a ubiquitous three-year leasing model. This seems an outrageously profligate. How do I say that word, John?
I'm not helping you now.
Help me with my reading. Use of the world's natural resources when you consider what great condition a three-year-old car is in. When I was a child, any car that was 5 years old was a bucket of rust and halfway through the gate of a scrapyard. Not any longer. You can now make a car for £15,000 that with tending love and care will last for 30 years. Well, I think he's sort of got a point there, isn't he? I'm a big believer in reusing and recycling and using stuff again.
Don't start talking about your no plastics in the bathroom thing again.
No, well, actually, which is a rule I have stuck to this year.
How is your RS6, by the way?
You'll be pleased. The RS6 is lovely. We won't talk about any of the other cars. Mm. But I do think he has got a point. I feel and sympathise with what he's saying, despite the fact that he's been shouted at a lot on social media by other people. What did you think, John? Because I'm guessing you might have a different take on this.
Well, I've been very quiet through your explanation of this. I just think, I mean, I'm reaching the age where I don't really care what a man has written on the internet now, because it's just, I'm going to have different opinions to him. I do think I will circle back to this 3 year ubiquitous leasing thing and how wasteful that is. That's all well and good, but I kind of, what he's rallying against there is this isn't a problem unique to the car industry, is it? You know, we are, if you think of the amount of things that we throw away, we don't really throw away cars. When you've had your 3 year lease up, that car doesn't go in the bin, does it? It goes somewhere else for someone else to buy. So if you kind of do need new car sales, otherwise we would just stop having cars in general, because yeah, as he says, it might last 15 years if it's treated really carefully, but there is a natural life cycle of these things, and you have to keep pumping new ones in, unfortunately, don't you? That is just how it is. So I thought that was a bit of a naive point to say, oh yes, well, we're buying too many new cars.
I mean,
if you stop producing new cars, nobody will be able to afford a used one, because the supply and demand will be all out of kilter.
It's the fact that he's clearly not a big fan of electric cars, is he? I mean, he says a problem lies with the lithium-ion batteries fitted currently to nearly all electric vehicles. They're absurdly heavy. Many rare earth materials and huge amounts of energy are required to make them, and they only last about 10 years.
Well, I take issue with that bit as well. I think most EV people would take issue with that. You know, I don't think it's not a case of 10 years and then it's dead. It's 10 years and its capacity is slightly reduced. But I think if you had a 10-year-old petrol or diesel car, probably its performance would be slightly reduced, as we often like to say it had 100 horsepower when it left the factory, and that was quite some time ago. So it's that same sort of thing, I think, with anything. Well, you know, it's all the other components as well. What's the point, in a way, of having, let's say, a battery does last 15 years, which is not what I'm saying. There are certain other bits of that car that are going to start to be falling apart after 15 years. So that's just sort of the nature of a thing driving around on salty roads, isn't it? So
it's not specific to the motor trade industry, unfortunately. We've got such a throwaway society now. And like a mobile phone, for instance, it's after 2 years now, we all know the battery is, oh, I need a new phone. My battery lasts not even a day anymore. Mm. So it's not just EVs and it's not just the motor trade, is it? There's a wider problem that things don't last, unfortunately. And we are in a throwaway society where it's seen we use plastic and everything's very disposable, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, if you want a car to last, if you want to buy a car that's going to last you 30 years, then you're going to have to pay a lot more money in its manufacture, aren't you? That's just sort of the nature of it. Things are designed to have a certain life.
Do you think he is regretting writing the article?
I don't know. I did think it was a very, I mean, I don't keep up with Rowan Atkinson too closely, But I did think it was a bit of a... my thought when this came out was, where's this come from? Why has he suddenly decided to have a bit of a pop at not just EVs, but the car industry in general? I thought that was a bit peculiar. It's not like a Giles Curran situation where he's literally paid to write some words down every month. And on this particular month, his Jaguar has upset him. So I just didn't quite know where it was coming from, this.
No, I agree. It did feel like a cat. And well, yeah, very a strange one. But there you go. I commit that one to the house.
We'll be right back. You want the best return from your advertising budget, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market, high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you. Now, let's get back to the quiz.
Right. What now? We're going to talk about Stellantis. We've got two Stellantis stories on the go. I'm going to talk about one and then you can do the other, probably.
Okay, thanks.
So this is a dealership closing after a month's notice of losing Stellantis' franchises. So this is Rowcliffe, I'm not sure how you say it. So they've announced that their Vauxhall showroom in Taunton will close at the end of this month. It says Stellantis told Rowcliffe in 2022 that its contracts would be renewed, but it's changed its mind last month. So we should say we've contacted Stellantis for comment on this, and they said they don't comment on specific business cases and so on. So we sort of got it one-sided, but yeah, effectively they have had supposedly 1 month's notice to shut everything down. In a month, you can't hope to be able to find a new franchise, you know, to change your brand. So the only option is to shut the dealership, which is very sad. Oddly, this doesn't seem to be a case of Vauxhall slimming down their network as such, although it may be. But the implication that I got from this, James, was that they've handed the franchise for that area on to somebody else.
Yeah, and I think they, and from the sounds of it, changed their mind at the last minute. I think they told Rowcliffe that they were going to be getting the franchise, because apparently that's what the statement says. But then with a month's notice, said they've actually decided to give it to someone else. So I can see why they're a little bit peeved off. And also quite interesting that they felt the need to put a statement out on their website. I mean, this is where this story came from. They'd published this statement saying, we want to explain what's happened. It wasn't our choice, and this is what's happened. So I think the fact that they've had to take to their website with this statement shows them how cheesed off they are.
It's interesting as well, because this is not the first dealership we've seen to put a statement like that out there, is it, in the last few months? No. Not necessarily Stellantis. We've had, was it a Skoda dealer? Well, I think Underwoods in Colchester did.
Yeah.
A whole manner of different brands. But yes, we've seen quite a few of these out in the open complaints, for want of a better word.
Yes, quite worrying. And the most popular story of the week on our website, no less. Yeah, very obviously a lot of people are interested. Well, I will follow that up with the aforementioned Stellantis story that you mentioned. And this is an interview James Batchelor did on Car Dealer Live, videos on our website and YouTube channel at the moment, with Damien Daly, who is the CEO, he's the managing director for Fiat UK, and their Fiat, professional range. And the line that came out of this one is he's talking about those dealers that are going to be losing their franchise, and actually said the ones that they're cutting are the ones that have underperformed, were his words. They're taking 20% out of their network, 125 dealers to just down to 100. He said it's happening 1 month later than planned. So it was supposed to happen at the end of May, but it's actually going to happen at the end of June. And I think this is why he's coming out to talk to us now and tell us this, because he knows we'll probably hear otherwise. So that was the main shock news that came out of that interview. He's also talked about his excitement about the new Abarth 500e, which looks pretty cool, actually. I think we've had some people out testing it. It's the one that, the electric car that makes a growling noise, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. He also talks in this interview about the need to still have showrooms. He's a big supporter of physical showrooms and why even if there's less of them, why he wants dealers to continue and wants customers to be able to go into dealerships. And they also, I think you talked about this on last week's podcast, they've introduced this electric car grant and asked the government to help out a little bit further to incentivize buyers into electric cars. It's quite a wide ranging interview with Damien Daly. Interesting one. I thought it was quite nice to see him be open and honest about these changes he's making. What did you think of it, John?
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing I got from it was that he's clearly quite passionate about the brand, isn't he? And Stellantis in general. I mean, he's a committed Alfa Romeo fan, isn't he?
Mm.
That's what he used to be in charge of, effectively. Was he in charge of that? Yes, he was. Boss.
He was, up until the end of last year.
So he's jumped ship across the corridor from to Fiat and to a Bath, isn't he? I mean, I don't envy him in a way, because Fiat don't have a lot of product at the moment, do they? Okay, they've got the 500e, which is, by all accounts, pretty good, I think, if a bit pricey, but then that's small electric cars for you. They've got, I want to say they've still got the Panda.
I don't even know if they have.
Do they have a Tipo? Is that a thing that still exists? And of course, they've still got the original new 500, which is now 15 years old and surprisingly apparently is still selling really well, he says. So yeah, bit of a tricky one, but he was saying there are new products on the way in the sort of vein of 500.
It's definitely worth watching that interview that Bax did, though. He's a nice guy. He comes across really well in that interview. And although he's given some bad news, there was also some very interesting stuff in there too.
Mm.
That's my one, John. Over to you.
I'm rapidly running out of stories here.
Yeah, the tennis.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are going through this a bit quickly. EVs again. So,
really?
I know, I'm sorry. The government admits that the gulf, in inverted commas, that's gulf, not golf, between the number of EVs and charge points will continue for months, which is not really surprising, is it? Because you can't just throw up an EV charger every time someone buys a new electric car.
In months is optimistic.
Sorry?
Months is optimistic. Years, surely.
Well, yes, exactly. For it to suddenly catch up now would be quite impressive, wouldn't it? The transport minister has blamed a disconnect, presumably between EV sales and them actually, or the marketplace, as they would say, throwing up chargers. Effectively, they've blamed the fact that too many people are buying EVs, in a manner of speaking. So, I tell you, of course,
you couldn't make it up, could you?
Well, when you have rapidly growing EV purchases, I'm quoting here, as we do in this country, you're going to see moments where the amount of infrastructure and the amount of vehicles disconnect a little bit. And we've certainly seen a bit of that recently and will perhaps do for a number of months or more yet, which is positive.
He is absolutely deluded, isn't he? I mean, come on. I mean, that is just, what a ridiculous statement. I mean, I know we've shouted about this many, many times, but I mean, come on. Like, they've incentivized people to buy these electric cars. They've told people that they're not going to be able to buy a normal petrol or diesel car from 2030 onwards. Funny enough, people have gone out and bought electric cars, want to charge them, and now they can't. So, I mean, I'm flabbergasted that this is even news, and it's on our website.
Careful, James. Careful.
John Bowman, not me.
Sorry, John. There is the follow-up paragraph to that was, he says, but what is so interesting is the new zero emissions vehicle mandate allows us to trigger billions of pounds of potential private investment. Zero emissions vehicle mandate is, am I right in thinking, some sort of chunk of money that they've committed to these things? How much more can I say about this? I don't think it's really...
Don't I? Shall I save you?
A very nothing statement, isn't it?
It is, yes. Really. Yeah.
I'm going to save you, John, from having to talk about that one any further.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to ask, actually. James, have you driven an EV? Are you an EV driver?
I have, yeah. I've had a couple of EVs.
Ooh.
And so how did you find the experience?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely fine. I mean, not for 90% of your time, you're charging at home anyway. I've done a couple of longer journeys in it, which require a bit more planning, and you've just got to be a bit, I think one time we have to wait for a charger, but most of them are broken.
Acceptable.
Yeah, just unplug everyone else's, it's fine. Yeah, it's they're fine. It's just they just require a bit more planning, but as we all know, and that nonsensical article, just isn't the infrastructure, is there? Or is there even is power to supply them all? Can the grid cope?
The thing
Well,
I find with electric vehicles is the people I know who've got one really love them, and when they charge at home, but they get as frustrated as I do, who dips in and out of trying EVs in line with the job, when it comes to using a public charging infrastructure. It's that lets the whole ownership experience down, doesn't it? You know, friends of mine, one of them's got an ID. Buzz, one's got an MG4. They both absolutely love them, but they charge them up all the time at home. But one of them's just been on a trip abroad, using a Tesla as a hire car and using the Tesla charging infrastructure. And he said even that was a nightmare. He had to plug into his Tesla's the Model Y can charge at 250 kilowatts, can't it? And he was obviously wanted to use that. That's the reason that he used it, hired this car, as he wanted to charge quickly. But everyone he plugged into was only giving him 30 kilowatts. Well, I mean, he sort of understands that he had to try some other ones. But most people who don't really know much about cars or how charging infrastructure works, they would just go, "Oh, well, it's charging slowly," wouldn't it? And just be really annoyed. So I can understand why people get cheesed off with public charging. And I think if you can stick with it at home, electric vehicle will work. Other than that, it's not going to.
I think it's for a bit of balance, yeah, I think the home charging thing does confuse the argument slightly, doesn't it? Because on the one hand, if we were introducing hydrogen tomorrow, you would have to, as in hydrogen cars, as some manufacturers have tried to do, if there wasn't the infrastructure there, nobody would buy one, which is unsurprisingly what has happened. Like nobody has bought a Toyota Mirai or a Honda Clarity or the Hyundai, whatever it is. Nobody's done it because they can't charge, they can't fill it up, rather, anywhere apart from, I think it's like the outskirts of London and one in Newcastle and something like that. Whereas perhaps because EVs can be, in theory, plugged in anywhere, is there perhaps less of an incentive for the government to prioritize getting an infrastructure in place because they kind of think, oh, well, 75% of people will just plug these in at home and it's not such a concern. So why are we over panicking about infrastructure quite so much?
Well, it's because that's the bit that gets the bad press, isn't it? That's unfortunately it, because you don't get these people who are happily charging at home and using them daily shouting about it on social media because they're quite happy. It's when it all goes wrong. Right, John, we've done electric cars enough. Let me do my
That's
last
what you
thing.
think.
I'll do my last story. So this is my last story is we had a couple of dealer results come through this year's couple of, sorry, this week, so about last year's accounts. But the one I'm going to pick is Days Motor Group, which is a Welsh car dealer group that represents the likes of Ford, Peugeot, Fiat, and INEOS. And I'll pick this one because frankly, I thought it was absolutely fantastic set of results. They turned over £257 million in 2022, and made a whopping £32.7 million pre-tax profit, which is a superb margin. It's far better than a lot of other businesses I've reported on recently. So much so that the directors enjoyed a near £3 million dividend. Thank you very much. And the business actually paid a £10 million dividend, second in a row, up to the holding company. So I did actually, as a result of writing this story, spoke to the business. I didn't use the quotes, but sort of off the record, like chatted to them about why the business was so successful, and they told me it was all about diversification. They'd actually managed to diversify their business. It wasn't just about new car sales. And looking a little bit deeper into their results, they have a hire business, hire car business, and a short-term rental business as well. And both of those contributed a decent amount of profit to those overall figures, and that's the point that I thought was so interesting about this. We all know selling cars is actually quite a new cars, quite a small margin business. But actually, if you've got a nice sized business like the Days Motor Group is, but it is diversified with lots of different income streams, you can make a very, very healthy living off the back of it. So fair play to them and the directors over there in Wales. They've done an amazing job, and nice to see, nice to be able to report on some good news for 2022, better than the year before, which is actually what a lot of people didn't think was going to happen.
And I will say as well, those particular diversifications, you do get a nice stream of cars coming off out of the end of their lease agreements and so on, don't you?
Well, it's funny that, isn't it? I know another company that tried that but didn't quite make a success of it. Kazoo, that was it. That's the one.
Yeah. Doesn't ring a bell.
No. Well, I'm sure you could read about them somewhere online.
Mm-hmm. Motor well, that's train, my, probably that covers very well.
My set of stories, John. I don't know if you've got any more.
Well, I do have one more. Last week, we talked about, I think, because I can't remember, the rapid descent in price of electric cars. But we also have the stats on the cars that went up in price the most the last month. And there's a bit of a trend, which is they seem to all be small runaround things, generally speaking. So the biggest increase was actually the, okay, this is not a runaround, Peugeot Partner TP, of all things, which went up 18% in asking price in a month. Average asking price, £10,184. Fiat Panda was number two, 16.9% up. Renault Twingo, Hyundai i10, Volkswagen up. Volvo XC70, which is a runaround if you're you. Suzuki Jimny. So there's, Kia Picanto. Lots of little cars seem to be going up in price. At the same time that all of the reasonably priced EVs are dropping quite substantially. So I don't know if this is finally, as you like to say, where is the cost of living crisis? We are not in recession, says James. is this finally starting to take effect?
Well, that is interesting, isn't it? I wonder whether it is people downsizing to save money, or is it just lots of students finally are leaving university and getting their first cars?
Oh, my word. What year were you born where a university student goes and buys a like 2-year-old Fiat Panda?
That's definitely the car I had when I left uni.
Yeah, this is not the era of free insurance on a Citroen Saxo, James Baggett. And
I never got
high rates
insurance of
interest on the Saxo VTR, James Baggett.
Well, move on, John, because I've got no more. I've got no comments to make on that.
Okay, well, I do have one more to squeeze in, which is purely to give my least favourite EV charging company a kick.
My which word. Is... You're listening to EV News with John.
With Eamon Holmes. So we're used to lots of surveys about the best and worst EV charging companies for when you're out and about. There's also now WhatCar have carried out a comprehensive study, says our story by John Bowman, of home chargers. So, i.e. the thing that you have to have welded to the side of your house, as I have, to charge up your EV.
What one have you got, John? What have you got?
I've got, not in the list, I've got a Shell one.
Oh, interesting.
You know, that famously ecological company.
Yes, yeah.
Got a charge point on my house. I should declare it came free with a Mazda. So thank you, Mazda, for that. It's very nice.
Do declare it. Well done.
Absolutely. The best. Coming top of this particular chart with an overall rating, which is combined with the cost rating, I don't know how they work that out, and the satisfaction rating, Pod Point is number one. So if you want an EV charger on your house, get a Pod Point. If you want an EV charger on your house that doesn't work, get a BP Pulse one, apparently. Satisfaction rating, 69.3%. Overall rating, 69.6%. So BP Pulse did the worst.
Possibly. How much moaning was there online about that?
What, from BP Pulse?
Or yeah. BP?
I'm not sure, because the thing that you're referring to, I think I have muted on Twitter.
Excellent. Very sensible. Yeah. Very sensible.
Yeah, it is it is a simple answer. I mean, anecdotally, I have seen a lot of reports of people having BP Pulse chargers installed on their houses, and then after 2 years, they break, the warranty ends, and then they want £1,000 to install a new one, which is not very fair, because you sort of think, how complicated can a 7-kilowatt charger be on your house? Not very, considering a shifty-looking youth came and installed my 7-kilowatt shower the other day and it took him half an hour. So yeah, it doesn't really seem like there can be that complicated.
I'm guessing, I just want to make a prediction here, that you, John, have done some research on James Shaw, our guest today, and realised that he was an electric car fan and that any stories to do with electric cars was going to favour you and the win. So we will now find out, won't we?
Well, that's quite an allegation, James, and categorically false.
But I wouldn't put it past you, John.
Well, as you know, I don't really prepare for anything, so...
the big buy thing
that would be a coincidence. But James, are you an EV advocate?
I am indeed. Yeah, no, I'm on Team EV.
I knew it.
Listen, it was a big bribe, though. There was a big bribe exchanged.
And what EV charger have you got in your house?
Sorry,
what EV charger have you got at home?
I used to have a My Energy one, the Zappy.
Very good. That came, I believe, third. Third.
Third.
Have you got solar panels? Does it talk to your solar panels?
We didn't at the time, no. But my friend did work for My Energy, so it was kind of a nice habit. But yeah, they're really good for the solar panels, aren't they? That's the whole point of it, isn't it? And the British, I guess, aren't they? So,
win-win.
Yeah, no, perfect. Yeah, so my story, as much as the transport and the golfing charges was an amazing story, and as much as I love Rowan Atkinson, and I'm going to go for Sytner, and they're adding to their collection.
Interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. Well, that sounds like you've won again, John.
It does, which is quite frustrating, because that means I always have to come up with the first story. I didn't even ask, were there any stories you think we missed this week? Any big news? Don't say Philip Schofield, because we've done that today.
No, nothing that I can think of. I think you guys have covered it all, apart from the launch of our new system, obviously, without getting a little cheeky plug-in.
Well, absolutely.
Well, he did, so it worked well.
That's on next week's podcast. Well, on that note, as our time runs out, all that's left for me to say is thank you to James for judging today. It's been great to have you on, and I hope you'll come back, particularly as I find more EV stories to talk about.
Absolutely, all in favour of the EVs.
And thank you as well to James for editing Motor Trailer for all these years.
Ooh,
and thank you as well for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So
you won't be.
Make sure you're subscribed to be notified when that podcast featuring Becca goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, don't forget you can swipe up now and vote on who you think won. If you want to check out the stories we've mentioned today, you can click the links in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk, where you'll find those and much more news besides. Thanks again, and until next time when I'm not here, goodbye.